Hello, and welcome to episode number one of Feedback. This is a brand new show on Unwind Media. I'm Rob Attrell, and I'm really excited to debut this show for you right now. In this episode, I sit down with my co-hosts, Damien and Brian Lee, or BL, to talk about all things music. We're going to try to do this show monthly to start, with BL and Damien recording some acoustic songs during each session. You can find this and many other shows on unwindmedia.com. This is a pilot project that we're trying out. I've got Brian Lee here with me, BL. How are you doing, BL?
Not too bad, thanks.
And with me as well is Damien Brooms. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm doing well.
So you guys are part of a band, Sons of Pluto. Mm-hmm. And you guys have been very interested in music pretty much your whole lives. And I thought, I'm also interested in music, but more on the enjoyment and technology end of things. And so I thought it would be a cool idea to just sit down with you guys and try out a music show. We'll see where it goes. We've talked about maybe trying to do it monthly if this works out, and just enjoy ourselves. So what do you say, chaps?
That's a fine plan.
I say you shouldn't say chaps, but yeah, other than that, completely for it.
Yeah.
Completely good to go, yeah.
I'm hoping you guys have guitars here, and Damien, you brought your voice.
I did. I remembered to bring it.
Sometimes he doesn't bring it.
No, it's true. Sometimes.
We're hoping to record a couple songs as well. So we're going to put those in either at the end or wherever it feels natural to put them in breaks. But I'm really excited to talk about music with you guys. I'm interested to hear your side of things in music. I know that we have differing tastes in some regards in music. You guys listen to music that either I don't listen to or I haven't really heard of. And I'm sure that I'm more interested in pop music than you guys are, but we also can talk about how, like, the term pop music is kind of a misnomer, mm-hmm. and it's changing all the time.
Yeah.
So why don't we start with how we listen to music? Does that seem like a logical place to start?
How we listen to music, sure.
Like, the way that you find it, the way that you get it, and then the way that you actually enjoy the music itself, whether it's going into a physical music store, downloading from iTunes, streaming it via some streaming service, like go into the whole thing. Maybe why don't we start with you, Brian? And
sure. How do I find music? I think because my kind of roots are more rock and roll, I've subscribed myself on Facebook feeds that are guitar magazines, rock and roll magazines, and they're always letting me know, you know, the next album that's coming out from this band and that band, or bands that are related to bands that I like. So using Facebook and other social media, they're able to kind of draw my attention to things that are very similar. So that's how I keep in touch. Other than that, billboard.com is a nice place to start. Yeah. For more mainstream rock.
Sure.
What do you mean?
I listen to varying types of music, and for top 40 type stuff, while I'm driving, I'll have like the new hot 89.9 on, and I'll be listening to that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you have to sift through to get something that's actually worthwhile in terms of what's played on stations like that. But there are some gems there, especially for the band. If we're playing a show and we're looking to do some covers to make people's ears perk up a little bit, then that's, I'm always looking for potentially like a new cover that I think would suit our needs and also get people really excited, because it'll be a song that they listen on the radio. So I do a lot of driving, so it's mainly between 89.9 and Live 88.5. I listen to Live 88.5 for some new like alternative type stuff and indie type stuff with a little bit more depth, I would say. And sometimes my third favorite is Dog, which is 101.9, and that's the blues station, and I find that station never fails. Like, I just love blues, so that's a really great station. But other than that, so I might listen to an artist on while driving on the radio, and then I'll go and download their stuff, or I'll for instance, yesterday I went into HMV. I don't really do a lot of shopping,
yeah.
But when I physically go into stores, I'll go to an HMV and see first and foremost if they have any vinyl. CDs don't really make me excited anymore. I can just download the MP3 tracks, but like the vinyl, and I think I've spoken to you about this in some other form. But the vinyl for me is fantastic. So for instance, yesterday I was telling BL on the way here, I went and got Best of Bob Marley on vinyl. And that's the other thing is that there are certain, we were speaking on the way here, that there are certain bands, certain types of music that work really well on vinyl. So for instance, like Bob Marley would work really well on vinyl. We were talking and we were listening to Arctic Monkeys, AM, their latest record. And
fantastic,
we were saying,
album.
Really great album. And we were saying that that's another record that would really work well on vinyl. So there are many different ways that I try and enjoy music. YouTube, I guess, as well.
YouTube's fantastic. Yeah.
Because what I really like on YouTube, once I hear the song on the radio, I might go on YouTube, especially if I'm considering on covering it, you know, or learning it just for myself or either for the band. YouTube's a really great way to go and see how other people interpret the song and sort of give ideas for like how we can kind of adjust it to our own needs as a band and sort of the sound that we already have. So many, many different ways, but I would say that I'm just immersed in music all the time in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, I think it's just something that comes with time. When you're interested, your ears generally perk out when people start talking about bands and you ask them, you know, ask your friends what they're listening to. It doesn't take too much effort. You just get a constant stream of new and beautiful songs to listen to all the time. Like it's,
and I mean, some bands are really genius in their approach in promoting themselves. So you look at bands like OK Go or Walk Off the Earth, who like quite obviously put a lot of time and effort into their videos and the way that they distribute their music. Was it you that posted a link saying OK Go is planning on doing some stuff like writing their stuff on DNA or something like that?
And saying and that like you're not really going to be able to play it, but it's more just like something to
just
try
to
something
say
new.
Try something new. So like bands like that I really respect that are really pushing the envelope. And so when you have bands like OK Go that are doing really cool videos that are really visually interesting, then that's going to blow up on social media. So you're going to see that, you're going to want to see it. And, you know, you find new and cool songs that way too. So also, SNL, I love watching Saturday Night Live, and they have, some really cool artists play there. For instance, a few months ago, Hozier was on. And he's a fantastic young artist. And so I remember watching SNL and the music came on. I never heard of Hozier, and the music segment came on. And he sang Take Me to Church, which is his big song right now. And I was like hypnotized. Like it was so fantastic. So many different ways. I'm constantly searching.
Yeah. Did you happen to catch Prince's medley?
So fantastic. So great. Oh my goodness.
I want to make the draw the attention to the guitarist as well, because Donna Grantis is from Toronto and she's relatively unknown. So I just want to say check her stuff out too. And I have her album. Oh, I forgot what it was called, but I paid for it and it was fantastic and got it in digital form. So Donna Grantis, check her out.
Cool. Yeah.
And also last but certainly not least, new music just by going to see shows. I mean, a few months ago we went to Lunenburg to see League of Wolves. It's a Canadian band from out west in Saskatchewan, right?
Yes.
They're fantastic. They're really, really great. And they just happened to stop by on their way to a festival in Quebec. They stopped by in Ottawa for one night to play the show at Lunenburg. And there, I mean, our friends were there because we had just played a show at Maverick and we went over there to hang out, and they were there and they were so great. My girlfriend, Becca, bought their CD.
Yeah.
Really great CD. And then even on Thursday, we listened to this band called The Tree Phones, which never heard of again. And and they were there. And just for me, Bial can tell you that, like, immediately as soon as they started doing their set, and it was two guys, and as soon as they started doing their set, oh my goodness, I was completely enthralled. And I went and they had vinyl records on sale, and I went and I bought the vinyl record after listening to them for like 6 minutes because we had to leave.
Yeah.
And went home and promptly put it on my record player and listened to it for the rest of the night. And it was so great. So, I mean, we all find music like online and very, very internet based in our approach for music, or radio based. But I think also just taking the chance to go out and listen to a band that you've never heard of before is a great approach too. Cause you never know. Like I now have a bunch of bands that I like to listen to because I just took the chance to just pay the money to just go listen to them. And they obviously want more viewership, for lack of a better term. So I'm sure they would really appreciate that too. Yeah.
What do you guys think of Ottawa in terms of the music scene compared to other Toronto, for instance? Quality of bands, quantity of bands. I mean, Montreal as well will also have, and then there's like obviously the big US cities for music.
Wow. I mean, I've only really taken performance seriously in Ottawa, so it's the only city that I know. But I feel like it's small enough that if you have some sort of base level of talent, you're able to kind of hop around and do a lot more than, say, Toronto or Montreal, where pay to play as a format is more common, right? Would that be fair to say? I have no idea, but
I don't know about pay to play for the other places. I'm not sure if that's common in those bigger cities, but my impression is that Ottawa is actually it's not the optimal environment for the music scene. The music scene, I feel, is growing, but that might just be because we're becoming more aware as a band of our surroundings. But anytime someone talks about the music scene in Ottawa, my impression is always like, if you want to make it in music, or if you want to take it seriously, then you should probably move to Toronto or Montreal. Or somewhere in the States.
Yeah.
I certainly think that there are there's a lot of good intentions here to try and beef up the music scene here in Ottawa. And there are a lot of good bands that we have come across too.
Mm-hmm.
Even the ones that I just mentioned, but like other ones that are in Ottawa, like our sister band, if you could say, is Beau Real, who really, really great band that we've gotten to know. And, so, you know, there are some great people here, but I just don't know if the environment is conducive to that, of like something that lets music flourish. It's government town.
Yes, but I might add, just because I went and attended this thing run by the Music Managers Forum. It's a Canadian group of music managers that connect with one another, and went to one of their sessions, and they were saying, well, actually, geographically speaking, if the two of the same bands, one in Vancouver and one in Ottawa, the one in Ottawa actually has a better chance in terms of spreading their music, because Boston's really close, New York's really close, Toronto's really close, and Montreal's really close. If you start in Vancouver, the nearest big city is what, Calgary?
Yeah.
So in having Ottawa as home base is not necessarily a bad thing if you're able to kind of make the jump elsewhere.
We're definitely close to other big, big places. Mm-hmm. You're right. Vancouver is a little bit far
tucked away.
But if we're speaking solely in terms of like Ottawa, it might be a good home base, but I don't know if it's a good place to sort of blow up on the music scene. You'd have to, like you mentioned, you'd have to probably go elsewhere quite a bit in order to make a name for yourself. But I honestly think, like, because one would think that the nation's capital would be some place where, you know, artistic minds flock to, and you know, we have this great scene for all types of art. But I think honestly that because Ottawa is a government town, and you have a lot of people that might be sort of different minded in their approach to what's important in life, or what sort of things they invest their time and their money into. Then you have, all, of course, all the students that come here from the, so there's sort of, both ends of the spectrum, I guess. But my impression is that if you want to sort of hone your skills, probably another city like Toronto or Montreal is a better place to go. But definitely you can have good roots in Ottawa so that you can go elsewhere. It is a central location, especially compared to Vancouver, you're right.
Yeah. Like Soul Jazz Orchestra is internationally renowned and they're from here. Like it's, and I'd be curious to figure out whether or not like other genres of music are more from here, like say, I don't know, classical or jazz or something else, you know,
that we maybe don't even know.
Yeah, exactly. That we're not even aware of. So
like Amos the Transparent's from here. Balconies is from here. They're U Ottawa music students. There are quite a few people that get started here, at least, you know.
So,
but maybe perhaps they just go elsewhere. And, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I've heard before that if you're in a place like Ottawa that maybe doesn't have as big a music scene as some of the bigger cities further on the East Coast or Toronto, that it's easier to get through. There's less bands. So it's easier for an individual band that's good to get through the noise and actually get noticed. Like you can actually use it to your advantage in that it doesn't take necessarily as much to become one of the best or most well-known bands when there are less bands to compete with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's any value to that?
Oh, that makes complete sense to me.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, we were able to do a lot of things that I think if Sons of Buddha was in Toronto or Montreal would not have been able to do, like play in the market on Canada Day in 2012 in a prime location in a parking lot. That would not have been possible. Playing in the National Arts Center, not possible.
Right.
Things like that.
We definitely stumbled upon certain opportunities and we don't understand how we got there.
Yeah.
Even on the 13th, we have a show at Atomic Rooster, which is somewhat of a pretty coveted venue to play at. Like a lot of bands play there. And
thanks, Donnie.
Yeah, thank you to Don and everybody. Hopefully we can bring a good show. But so even that, like yesterday I was thinking, because one of the servers at Atomic Rooster said that the way that Don, the owner, usually goes about things is to listen, like the band has to have a demo. He listens to it maybe on his drive to work and he decides if he likes them. And if not, then they don't get a call back. If they do, then he'll book a time slot. And the time slots are very sought after. But for us, it was kind of, we showed up and I went up to him and said, can we play? And he was like, okay, let me see the next time that I have available.
Mm-hmm.
Having never heard us, I think we're comfortable and confident enough in our set, in the music that we play and our skills that we will not disappoint. But I mean, just the fact that we got that opportunity, if we were elsewhere, if we were in Toronto, they would probably laugh you out of the place.
Right.
If you just showed up and said, I don't have a demo, I don't have anything, you don't know who I am, but can I play here?
Right.
So I think there are definitely a lot of opportunities that are open to us because there aren't a lot of people who are here trying to make it. And that might work to the benefit of the music scene in general when you have people here that are really, really going for it and they're going to try and make their name here instead of elsewhere because there's so much little resistance. And then, of course, more people will come here and then it'll get harder and harder and harder. And then we'll have another Toronto or Montreal. But until then, I think we're probably in a good spot. I mean, I guess that's a way to look at it. Because if you're really good, if you could be like, so to speak, sort of a big fish in a little pond in Ottawa, then that could be potentially a very good thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of truth to that statement.
I think I obviously don't know, but you guys have played at Atomic Rooster before. You guys did an open mic there at least once that I'm aware of.
Oh, twice, maybe three times.
Maybe, yeah.
So is it possible he was there and they had at least heard you at some point?
I don't know. I know the server recognizes us.
Okay.
The server that we spoke to, I don't know what her name is. Maybe he's seen us before. You're right. Maybe because I didn't know what the owner looked like. He comes in pretty late. We're usually there pretty late. Like maybe he's seen us before.
Right.
The night that we went and spoke to him, did we do an open night mic that night?
I don't think so. We were just, I think we were just relaxing after a band practice and we were like, we might as well go and have a chat, see if he's there.
I thought we played.
Did we play? Maybe we played.
I thought we played and he came right after we finished. So he hadn't seen us. That's how I remember it. And then we met Derek Wilson, strongman Derek Wilson, that night too.
So a lot of it also is a little bit of luck too, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Being out there and...
Yeah. And you might meet the right person or you might be able to showcase a little bit of your stuff and they're able to kind of overhear it and... Yeah.
But we played some stuff that kind of obscure. Even the NAC, the reason we were there, it was a fundraiser to end polio in some developing countries. And so I think, you know, luck, but also there are a lot of great things that go into being a successful band. I think one of the things for us, what works is that all of us in some way, shape or form are plugged into the Ottawa, not just music, but events scene and things that are going on in Ottawa. We have a lot of great friends that run events, certain events, you know, events are very successful and there's like food and music. So if you take care of the food and you need the music, you know, because we're nice people, our friends might come to us and say, listen, I need a band for this thing. Then we play that thing. And then there are other people of the same sort of nature there who might be organizing another event in the future. And then they approach us and say, I remember you from this. Do you think that you could play this? We've gotten some pretty good gigs from free shows that we did as favors for other friends because
that have led to contacts, future shows.
Yeah,
I'd say members are very multifaceted, and very expansive sort of social.
I think Atomic Rooster, for the 13th, I think that's probably the first show in a long time that we proactively went and sought out.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else was sort of handed to us, which we're really lucky. And again, it's
very thankful.
Because Ottawa's not so, you know, competitive, perhaps, with the bands that are here. So we've been given a lot of great opportunities, which, yes, we are very, very thankful for. So, yeah, it's been great.
Cool.
Never knew.
That we've got on here to talk about, and I know, Damien, where you fall on this, analog versus digital. Analog was the technology, like before computers, because that was when digital started. Like, people listened to vinyl for how, do you know how long vinyl's been around? Has it been, is it a few hundred years, or is it sort of, well, a lot more recent than that?
I'm not sure if it's been a few hundred years. What are we, 2014? So maybe close to like 200 years or something like that. Yeah.
And so that is a very, like, it's a very warm listening experience. There's a lot of character in vinyl audio.
Mm-hmm.
And shifting to digital, people have been able to make a lot of different stuff. There's a lot of stuff you can do with electronics to create sound. And so what do you guys, is there one that you guys prefer over the other, or is it sort of, it depends on what it is you're listening to? Is there a clear winner for either of you between analog and digital, or is it sort of a toss up depending on the context? I mean, and then there's obviously, if you're watching a live performance, there's that's sort of a third thing where you're actually just directly hearing whatever they're playing. Do you guys have a favorite?
I'm a bigger fan of analog, and where I'm coming from is the sounds that are coming out of my amp and the pedals that I use. I found over time for the performance that the analog pedals gave me more oomph, more meat on the bones when I play through. When I strum those chords, it moves something in people and in myself that the digital technology can't replace. But at the same time, digital technology has allowed us to, you know, practice silently, say in an apartment through the Jam Hub using, multi-effects pedal, say.
Yeah.
So from a performance and practice standpoint, there's, you know, pros and cons for each. But I'm a bigger fan of the analog overall, but I can see where the digital flexibility can be very handy.
I think both of them have, their place. I mean, Dave Grohl would definitely, I think, say analog, or I don't want to put words in Dave Grohl's mouth, but you know, I think he's a big advocate for analog. I just recently watched Sound City, believe it or not. I'd heard of it for years and years and sat down and watched it. And I thought it was fantastic. And analog has this thing where it's raw, it's untouched, and it's more human than digital, obviously. Digital is computerized. And, you know, analog allows for us to make those mistakes that actually might work to enhance the music. the way that you slur a note, or the way that you, and one note bleeds into the other, or you might, you know, have this certain effect in your voice, this quiver that, you know, in your voice, or the raspiness in your voice, or something like that. I think there's something very, very human about analog. And there's something very human about music. So, yeah. So, you know, not touching it and just letting it be what it is, what it's meant to be. I think there's something to be said about that. I, however, enjoy and am currently in the process of actually like experimenting a little bit with synths and with like certain effects. So there's definitely for me a place for digital sounds. For the sounds, definitely, but perhaps for me, not for touching up the mistakes of an instrumentalist or of a singer, because I feel like you can use digital to supplement analog, to go on top of analog, but you shouldn't use digital technology as a crutch in right. lieu of analog. Because then we get into, I'm a huge fan of live music, and I think that a lot of bands that or artists that have music out there should, for instance, when we write music, for me, anyway, I'll just speak for myself. When I'm writing music, I'm always thinking about what the crowd, what the audience experience is going to be, what they're going to think sounds cool, or you know, certain transitions that we can do, and how it'll affect their experience. I feel like when you use digital technology too much, then it's sort of misleading for the audience, because they have this certain idea, if they listen to a recorded version of that song, of what that song is supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
They have their own idea, the way that you told them, you spoon-fed it to them, you said, this is what I sound like, and this is what the song sounds like. But if you were touched up, if your voice was digitally airbrushed, so to speak, yeah. and then you come and you don't have that technology available to you as you're singing live or as you're playing live, and then they find out that you actually are really terrible as an instrumentalist or as yeah. a vocalist, then that's sort of, I feel like that's like some sort of like mismarketing. Like that's like lying to your audience. So I don't think that digital should be used to make someone sound different or better than they actually are. I feel like you should have some honesty and integrity in the way that you approach music in that respect. But I love when I hear certain sounds and effects that you couldn't get from any regular instrument yeah. that you can only yeah. get from a computer. Something like that. I think so. Digital as an add-on, I'm a huge fan of, but not for altering someone's natural abilities, right. because it's almost like taking a performance enhancing drug yeah. in sports, yeah. you know? So yeah.
The digital revolution though, like I would never not, yeah, I would never go back to CDs ever again. Like this, the idea that I can put songs into my phone, into an iPod yeah. and carry it, like with like me thousands, everywhere, thousands upon thousands
of songs.
Yeah. And I can share with friends, I can do this and that. Like in terms of the user experience, digital is definitely the way to go for if you want something that's portable. That said,
yeah, yeah.
if I can get vinyl quality, you know, a listening experience everywhere I go, I'd go with that. But for sure. now, it just seems such a great idea.
And you're right. Vinyl is a very warm listening yeah. experience, but I think it's perhaps the nostalgia of the whole thing.
Yeah.
We associate vinyl with an older time,
kind of romantic notion, yeah,
right.
Yeah. And the whole thing with opening up the plastic yeah. and then opening the sleeve and reading the lyrics and following along, looking at the pictures, it's a whole sort of ritual, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like to have you know, hand ground coffee beans, you know, before mm-hmm. they make, and then they use hot, fresh water from a particular source. And that whole coffee making experience, very nostalgic, you know, yeah. same thing with, you know, vinyl mm-hmm. experience. Right. So mm-hmm. I think there's some sort of romantic.
There's a lot of tradition to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sound. And I'm even thinking back to Usher's Confessions album, a few of the tracks he had, I don't know how they did it exactly, but he inserted record sounds
right,
into
like
it.
Like a crackle.
Like a, yeah, a little yeah. crackle.
Yeah.
And there's something as someone who listened to vinyl growing up, there's something about hearing that when you put the needle down, like it's an emotional experience. It's not just listening to music. You're immersing yourself in it.
Totally agree.
Yeah. No, that crackle. And that crackle might have been digitally added. Who knows?
Yeah, well, that's but it.
Could they be, probably yeah. put a really sensitive microphone up to someone starting the record
yeah.
version of it.
Yeah. But yeah, that's even that sound, just that sound. Yeah. There's something about that sound. But it's like the anticipation.
But I might add, though, would tape cassettes be analog? Like, we've equated vinyl with analog, right? But there's other forms of vinyl and other forms of analog, like beta tapes and other things, right? Why, like, those are analog too. No one likes cassette tapes.
No one likes cassette tapes.
Yeah, perhaps cassette tapes will come back.
They're the forgotten format.
Totally forgot about cassettes.
So the whole digital analog divide made me think of the process you guys have gone through in the last, I'd say, year and a half, where you're now trying to record yourselves to, like, you've taken the step of, you've written some songs and you want to record them and put them out in the world. And you started off, and I remember because I was there, I started off extremely, like, so optimistically, so promisingly trying. You wanted to do it. You wanted to all be in one room, the whole band, record it live. And you wanted to, if it took 100 takes, you guys wanted to play it 100 times to get something like, I'm pretty sure most of the Beatles sessions that they did back in the 60s were like, they played through. Like, you can hear people, like, you can hear them swearing in the background of some songs.
Yeah.
When they mess up, but they're playing it through, and whatever they record, that's what's going out.
Yeah.
And you guys have had some issues with that now. And, well, yeah, several issues along the way. Do you think there's, like, is it a matter of technology? If you guys had a budget of like $100,000 or whatever a record label budget would be with the studio and with all this equipment, do you guys still think it's worth going in and trying to do that as a whole band, like miking up the drums individually, like putting all your amps and everything, all your pedals, and playing through like that? Or do you guys think that maybe you've learned and now you can see the value in going in and each tracking your own stuff, tracking the vocals separately? What do you guys think? Is there, like, I think, again, it's maybe a pros and cons of both thing, but do you guys still, in your, like, in the dream scenario, would you guys want to go through and do like a live session recording and then maybe clean up little things or move things around? Or do you guys think that was a thing to try and it was really interesting and a great experiment to try, but maybe it's not the way, if you guys are going to record an EP, it's not the way to do it. You're going to go into a studio and do it one at a time or maybe two at a time, whatever. Is that something you guys have thought about?
I think about it quite often. And I think that there's a place for each of those approaches, depending on the song, really.
Yeah.
If you have a song that is that needs a little bit more isolation from everyone, or it depends on the arrangement of the song, what you want from the song. Most of our songs, all of our songs we play live.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's something intangible, something that you don't subconsciously feels very, very good from performing and listening to a song live. There's some other element at work there.
Yeah.
When you're listening to live music and even not to embarrass her, but Becca, my girlfriend, she is constantly amazed by bands, and she's constantly amazed at Sons of Pluto. She comes to nearly all of our shows, and she's always amazed. She always says, like, it's crazy that four people are playing four different instruments or, you know, playing,
yep.
You know, you have these four individuals that use their instruments and it sounds good together, or like who are singing together and it sounds good. And you guys know when to change and you know what beat to follow and like who to follow. And just something about playing together. I think there's a rush in doing that. I feel like if I were to, 'cause here's the thing, when I'm playing, usually when I, when we play live, I'm also playing something else. I'm playing a guitar or I'm playing a song, a piano. There are a couple of songs where I don't play anything and I just get to sing. I identify myself first and foremost as a singer. And so when I don't have to play anything else and I can put all of my energy into singing, then I feel like I get a better result. So that means that when I'm playing and singing, it might not be the best vocal sound. You might not get the best vocals out of me. When I'm in a sound booth, maybe, and I'm singing over the track that everybody else has played, then you might get the best vocals. So it's sort of a catch 22 because I like playing and singing and doing everything as if we were doing it on stage. Cause I think that there's just this extra element there that makes it really, really special. But it might not be the best approach all the time. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you're going to have to do things separately. But again, it depends on the song. My perfect world would be do the song 100 times.
Right.
Do it live, even just for the instruments. Because there are certain ways that BL might play, Shay might play, Christina might play, I might play. And it's because we can see each other. Because we have that connection while we're playing, we're all in the same room, we're playing the same song at the same exact time in our lives, and we form that connection when we start playing music. So even just for the instruments, it might be better to do live, but for the vocals and for any other effects that you have to throw on top, then go and do that after maybe. But my preference is live because it's more familiar to me, and it's more akin to like playing live for an audience, which I think we all love to do more than anything.
Yeah, I think so. In the ideal world, I totally would agree with Damien. I mean, there's nothing that beats having three other people that you respect as musicians, as human beings, right there, live. You lock eyes and you know exactly what's going to happen next.
Yeah,
irreplaceable. There's no words that can describe that rush. And putting that and capturing that is like putting lightning in a bottle. If it takes 100 times, it takes 100 times. Like that would be the ideal situation. But when you begin to examine the business side of things, effectiveness, this and that, corrections that you have to make, deadlines you have to meet, mm-hmm. profits to be made, I can see why the layered version creates a product that's more palatable, say, to a record company or to your producer, because you're able to, like Damien said, focus on the one thing that you need to do and do it right. Yeah. One take.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to lock eyes or trying to sing and play at the same time, which can be, you know, part of a challenge when you play live. So I can see benefits to both, but in the ideal world, I'm with Damien, like definitely the live situation for sure.
Mm. Cool. I like that. The live thing, I think in the modern music industry is underrated. There are people that do it, but the vast majority, like they might not even, Britney Spears might sing and she won't even ever see the band that she's singing with. Same thing with voiceover acting. And
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Yeah. Like you don't see the people. Yeah,
you never meet them.
You never meet them. Yeah. But you're like for Shrek, let's say like Mike Myers never met Eddie Murphy or they never met Cameron Diaz. Like, but their voices are interacting in this. I don't know. I just feel like there's something wrong with that.
It seems really weird.
Yeah.
Some cartoons though do it with multiple actors in a room. Eh?
I know Rango did that. I don't know if they did the voiceover work all together, but they did the actions. Like they actually acted out the movie.
Okay.
Johnny Depp and all the other actors were in a studio acting out. And so the animators based all the movements and all the body language and everything, all the physical humor off of what the actors actually did. Like they actually had to do that. Right. I don't know about their voices, but I think there's something kind of perverse about, you know, singing along with people that you don't know or you've never met.
Right.
Because people get together to make music.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing that people have in common. Like a lot of people, most people, I would say, if not everybody, loves music. And so people should get together. Like music should promote being together in a band or listening or something like that. It should really be a group experience. So if you isolate yourself from that, I feel like that's like sort of a perverse form of music. Not to put down anybody who, especially someone as successful as Britney Spears. She's
got a lot more money than I do.
But so, you know, she's doing something right. But I mean, I just feel like there's a place there for nurturing the connection between human beings, that something that music does for the human soul, that I think is very, very good. So you should try and do it together as opposed to isolated.
Yeah. Well said.
it reminds me of an outtake from Lord of the Rings, where Ian McKellen was sitting in a green room, like surrounded with a green table. And I think there was something like there were mirrors placed so that he, like, where he was supposed to look to see people. And there's a footage I've seen where he just, like, basically breaks down crying because he's like, this isn't why I got into acting. Like, this was supposed, and when they did the original trilogy of Lord of the Rings movies, it wasn't. They did like realistic effects for as much of it as possible. They actually used, there's a wagon scene at the beginning of the Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Where they have, it's Gandalf and, like, is it Frodo in Lord of the Rings? Or is it Bilbo? It's Frodo, right?
It's Frodo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're sitting in this wagon that's been modified so that they can just film it. And Elijah Wood looks tiny.
And Ian
McKellen looks huge.
He looks huge. Yeah, yeah. I've seen that.
And it's forced perspective, but they use all these real effects. And then with the Hobbit movies, they've done away with a lot of that. And so it's a lot of green screen and a lot of CGI added later. And like it affected him so deeply in that moment that he just broke down.
Yeah.
It's crazy because it's so true. You have someone sitting there, and like the Avengers is another huge one. It's just like, they're doing all this work in front of a green screen. Like you have to, and it almost makes you a better actor because you have to picture everything that's going on.
I'm always saddened by that, but also very, very impressed. If you think of it, sort of a lighter sort of example would be Ted with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
What's his name? Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah.
He had to do all of that stuff with this imaginary bear.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous. It means, I guess, that Mark Wahlberg is a better actor than I thought he was previously, probably. But it also means that there was no, because if you have this really great drama, like doing away with all the special effects for a moment, like if you have this really visceral film, the actors play off of each other. Like, and I've done some stage work, and I know that it depends on who your co-stars are. That affects your performance. If your co-stars aren't giving anything back to you, then you can't play off of each other. Or if you have to like carry the role or the show yourself, and like all the expressions and all the excitement yourself, and that can be very, very exhausting. I'm sure Sir Ian McKellen felt very exhausted in that moment that he's basically having to do everything himself, because there's something about being there together in front of each other where you can feed off of another person's reaction and then you react in a certain way, very much like music. Like you can feed, I love looking over at BL. He looks over at me and we can say like, wow, that was like a really good 8 bars that you just did. Like fantastic.
Well, not say you, that, it would be, we yeah. did.
Well, I mean, like if you,
unit.
But yeah. you know, like if you go off on a solo and you've done this song like a million times, but you did something new and unexpected in that solo, then it's just like, that was really cool, man. Like that whole thing. And then that makes me excited. And then I try and do something really exciting with the song. Definitely something to be said for playing music, any sort of performing, whether it be acting or music, in front of actual people, in front of other people. You just can't beat, as much as computers try, like you cannot beat the human touch. Like there's something very cool about that. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
If I disappear, told her I'm not really looking for another mistake. Called an old friend thinking that the trouble could wait. Then I jumped right in a week late return. I reckon she was only looking for a lover to burn. So I gave her my time for 2 or 3 nights. And I put it on hold until the moment was right. Went away for months until our paths crossed again. She told me I was never looking for a friend. Maybe you can swing by my room around 10. Baby, bring a lemon and a bottle of gin. We'll be in between the sheets of the late AM. If you wanted me, then you should have just said she's singing. Don't win my love. That heart is so cold. All over my arm. I don't want to know that, babe. Don't. Couple weeks, only want to see her. We drink away the days with a takeaway pizza. Before the text message was the only way to reach her. Now she's staying at my place and loves the way I treat her. Singing out Aretha all over the track like a feature. Never wants to sleep, I guess that I don't want to either. Me and her, we make money the same way. Four cities, two planes the same day. And though the show's never been what it's about, maybe we'll go together and just figure it out. I'd rather put on a film with you and sit on the couch. But we should leave for the plane and we'll be missing it now. But I'd written it down, the way the things played out. So confused about how she was kissing them, how she will figure it out. While I'm sat here singing, I don't win my love. That heart is so cold, all over my arm. I don't wanna know that, babe. Don't win my love. I told her she knows, take aim and reload. I don't wanna know that, babe. I'm a hotel door. I don't even know if she knows what for. I looked on her shoulder. I already told you. Trust and respect is what we do this for. I never intended to be next, but she didn't have to take him to bed, that's all. And I never thought he was a threat until you disappeared with him to have sex, of course. It's not like we were both on tour. We were staying at the same hotel floor. And I wasn't looking for a promise or commitment, but it was more than just one. And I thought you were different. This is not how you figure out what you want. It's a bit too much too late. If I'm honest, and all this time, God knows I'm singing. Don't win my love. That heart is so